God made man to dust the ground and breathed his nostrils, his breath of life, and man became a living being. Other translations say a living soul. So even though chapter 1, that part's where he said he made man, now we're looking at more details about how he makes man and what he does with man and what he gives to man from that standpoint. Yes, sir. Those are parts out over it here, Tim. We're made in God's image. If a son acts like he's the image of his father, what does he do? You see those characteristics and traits in him when he acts like and speaks like and moves like his father, which is what we should do in a spiritual standpoint. We should act like our father, talk like our father, do those things that were pleasing to him in that standpoint. So now we got man created, and God's going to make this special place for man to be. This garden, Garden of Eden, in Eden here. The things about it, look at the plants that are there. We talked about the trees in the garden, given for man to eat, for food. There are four rivers that are mentioned there, two of which are even identifiable today, the Tigris and Euphrates. Bring us kind of where it'll be. I'll show you a map here in a minute of where it's thought to be. And there's also spoken of the precious stones and gold and other things that are in the area there. And God takes man and he puts him there in this garden. But not just to be there in the paradise. What's he there for? What's he there in the garden for? To tend it and to keep it. He's giving man work to do when he's there in the garden. God's created this garden and man's there to tend it and to keep it. That's it. So here's a map, the circle down toward the bottom there, the area where it's thought by scholars that the Garden of Eden may have been because of the river names that are coming through there. The Pishon is at the very bottom, and that's a question mark, is that where it really was. Two of the rivers are named by the Tigris and Euphrates, you know where they come down through there. So, is that really where it was? I don't know, but it's a reasonable guess made by many scholars. Now, man's in the garden. God gives him some can and some can't. But what can he do? He can eat every tree in the garden. But then there's a can't. Okay. Every tree in the garden, but which one? The tree of knowledge of good and evil, okay? That day you eat of it, you're going to die. Now, notice this is made, if you look at the chronology here, this is told to Adam before woman is created. So Adam's told this by God. When we get to the next chapter about Eve sinning. Well, does she know about this? We'll talk about that later. Sure she did, but. The chronology is no care about that. So he puts the man in the garden, eat of every tree there in the garden, except the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and he should not eat that, because if he eats that, he's going to die. So God looks at all this creation we have. He's created the earth and all these things that are in it. We looked at in chapter 1. He's created man and this garden for him to have with all these trees to eat the fruit of. What's missing? A helper for man. Okay. But none of the animals are made for that. So God looks at it and says, man shouldn't be alone. I will create a helper comparable to him. So because of that, then, he takes the deep sleep to go on man, he takes the rib from man, and he creates woman from this standpoint. He brings her to the man. I know this is all familiar to everybody that's got in here already, so it's review for everybody. And if I be alone, God creates a helper for him and brings her again. Then we get into this verse 24. I'm going to talk about it for several minutes here, and then some more we get later on into it. Then. You got a Bible left. Here you got a Bible. Read verse 24. Good loud, please. This is 2:24. Okay. Tell me what you see in this verse. This verse tells us. Exact point I wanted to get to start with, Joe. Thank you. What is the therefore? Why is this verse important? What has this been said about before this? Man was there, woman was made, brought to man, okay, for him to be with, and based on that example, what God has done here, he says, therefore, based on this, and he gives this law here about marriage. Therefore, a man shall do what? Leave his father and mother. So what are we doing now? We're creating a separate new household, okay, a new arrangement, leaving father and mother and going to his what? His wife, not his what? Not his partner, not his anything else you want to put in there besides that. Okay. It's not she shall leave her father and mother and be joined to her partner, or whatever modern terms are these days. But a man was created, a woman was created, they were brought together, and God said, based on that teaching, what? Based on that, a man will leave his father and mother. He's going to his wife. They become one flesh. I got a slide later on that talks more about that one flesh thing a little bit. Okay. Lots and lots and lots of lessons in that verse. Now, why do we look at this verse here, and generally it's referred to as God's universal marriage law? Why would it be for people like you and me and not for Adam and Eve? Don't say we're not out there, but why could they not do this? They didn't have a father and mother to leave, okay? So it wasn't that Adam and Eve was to leave their father and mother and set this thing up, but based on what God had done in creating them and putting them together, he sets this principle for them. Now, we'll come back to that just in a minute. Also, taken off from this, with Malachi, they become one flesh. Talk about God hates divorce. They become one flesh, and that way for life. So, when Matthew 19, when Jesus is teaching about marriage and divorce, what does he go back to for his basis? He goes back to from the what? From the beginning, he goes back to this very point in time we're talking about here. He made them at the beginning, made them male and female. Got that again brought out here. And leave his father and mother, join to his wife. They two shall become one flesh. And no longer two, but one. And when God puts them together, man shouldn't take them apart. So Jesus, Matthew 19 here, goes back to this very verse in Genesis 3:24 for his principle of marriage. Now, got some time left. Let's think about some things for us. I'm going back there on these whole two chapters here. So I believe the first five words of the Bible. We talked about this quite a bit last time. In the beginning, God created. Okay. If I don't believe those words, then what? What does it open up? Why I'll believe the rest of it, right? We'll get to that form of slide in a minute. Why would I believe the rest of it? Okay. If I don't believe this, then what am I going to use to explain the world? Where'd it come from? I got to go to evolution or some type of other thing besides in the beginning God created. I don't take these first five words here. So I got to explain where the world came from. I've got to look where I came from. Because in the same chapter where man is created. But if I didn't come, if God didn't create the world, if I don't believe that, then where'd I come from? God, we talked about him last time, him being eternal, already in existence, before this point in time in the beginning. So, is there anything left for me after this life, if I don't take the first five words here? That in the beginning God created, that God was eternal, that God existed. So what's for me after this life? If it all came about by just some part of evolution. And then the point made me to go. Why am I believing the rest part of the Bible if I don't believe it? If I can't believe these first five words, this first verse, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, why would I want to believe in the rest of it? Lots of people look at it. Surely somebody's got some kind of comment. Anybody? Believe that, it does away with it. No. Yes, sir. Yeah, good point. Okay. I get there in a minute. Good point. Yeah, we made the comment last time, remember that? And God said, and God said, and God said. And we believe that he created the world by his hand said, God said. It's also God said about more things over here. What do you think about too? If we believe that this happened and God spoke it into existence, then we all believe other things God said. Okay, I got up here now, Ephesians 1. Think about what God did for us. Before the foundations of the world, he chose us, predestined us, adopted his sons through Christ. It's that verse back to this very time before the beginning we're talking about here. What God has done for us, and that through Christ, he's adopted us as his sons. Alright, now, Albert, here's the point. Okay. God spoke and the world was created. Power? How much power? God spoke and it happened. Okay. We did this. Awesome. I've seen several pictures on social media the last few days of the aurora lights caused of sun flare and this kind of stuff. And some beautiful, beautiful pictures have come out the last few days. I don't know if you've seen those or not. It is awesome. Complicated world we live in, all the systems in my body that God created, this design, this omniscience, this all-knowing. It's God who would create such stuff as this. I like this song, we sing it, it means that much more to us. How great is our God? What has he done for us? What did he do in this creation? The power, the might, the awesomeness of this world he's created here. Let me get my soapbox here for 1 minute. This word awesome, I hear used, you may not hear a lot in your environment you're in. I hear it used a lot. That's awesome. Man, that was awesome. Ooh, that was awesome. I don't like that word used like that. This was awesome. What God did was awesome. Some of the things that we use that word for, they are not awesome. God and his mighty creation was awesome. It was perfect in design. It was done by his mighty power. How great is our God? How will I respond to such a being? I'm not going to react. I think about God. What he is. who he is and what he's done. And the fact that I'm creating his image. He's a mean to me. Somebody said earlier, I'm in his image. I do what he says. I do things like he does. I walk like he walks. I talk like he talks. I think like he thinks. I reflect him in me. I'm in his image. So Dennis, if you guys come to class this morning, if you have some comments, you haven't said a word yet. Okay, anybody thoughts on this slide? Got a couple more here. Let's go at the marriage plan for a minute. Talk about that. God's marriage rule from the beginning was a man and a woman to be married together. That's where I got there. I got a couple slides of comments here. These two should become one flesh, be considered as one body, no separate or independent rights, privileges, care, concerns, each being equally interested in all things concerning the marriage state. We come together as husband and wife. We are married. No longer what I want. I'm now living and looking for my spouse to please them, to do things for them. We do things together. We are one. We're there as the husband's ahead. I understand all that, and the wife's the mission. But the common equal terms that. This is only been married. Long time. They don't know, does it? How many? 59 years, okay. I picked on him, and maybe somebody in here that's got longer than that. I don't know. But maybe the longest in the room here. 59 years. And I will assure you those 59 years didn't happen unless some of this principle was there. Yielding to this one another. And I've got this in my slides. I think the last time I taught this Genesis was for a high school class. So I know some of you have been married 59 years. You don't need this slide anymore today. We do have a few young folks in here though. There's some of these things that you know for them. This marriage situation together. Common interest. Caring for one another. It's in the marriage relationship. And there's one more here. This is how happy such a state would be where God's institution is properly regarded, the parties are married as the apostle expressed in the Lord, where each by acts of the most tender kindness deals only to anticipate the wishes and contribute in every way possible to the comfort and happiness of the other. We do have some young married couples in here that might gain from this slide. Think about the marriage situation and living for one another, making each other happy, caring for one another, contributing to the happiness of the other. And you won't have to worry about what Malachi said about divorce. They won't do that. I am so used to teaching class where I get a lot of comments. I'm finishing it early every class, but I'm not getting any comments back. People talk about some of this stuff for me. There goes Dennis. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
One of the great things that distinguishes us is that all people are following Jesus. If we weren't made in God's image, we would be loved, we wouldn't have choices. Therefore, there would be no question of temptation, sin, all the other things that come with that. Sometimes people have this idea that God didn't deserve it by making us able to choose. If he had not been able to choose, he would not have made us able to choose. continually as part of that definition in Nehemiah chapter 1 sets the stage for everything else.
Okay. And as we usually do, because of the broadcast and because of the people here, and I'll probably repeat what Dennis has said here. Most of you already heard it. But being made in God's image, his point is, the one characteristic that God has, they gave us, they didn't give to any animal, is the ability to love. And from the very beginning here, I'm making us in his image, that ability to love. He loves us, we love him, it sets the stage for everything that's going to happen through the rest of the Bible. In chapter 3, we get to next time, if man had loved God properly, would he have sinned? No. But we're different. We're in his image, and that one characteristic I did not bring out, thank you, Dennis, is that of love. God has love. God is love. And he gave us the ability to love. Now, the other animals have that. They're a loyal dog, but not love. How do you have it? Principle here from Genesis 2:24 is throughout the scripture. A number of times in the New Testament talks about that. Okay. Anybody else? We have 5 minutes left. I'm going to lose already again. Yes. Sure it is. Commitment, a commitment. And so often in the marriage ceremony, you know, everything is the ceremony itself, it gets the attention, not the vows. That's why we have to teach and our young folks and drill the vows and what they mean in well before that wedding ceremony, because I'm very, very fearful that in a wedding ceremony, nobody knows what they said anyhow. Because they're all just a pomp and circumstance of the time. Most of the actual vows will be made. Rob's point is that we're not just now getting into the man and man and woman relationship that we see in our modern society now. I'll go back to the time of Sodom and Gomorrah, and it was there then. So it's not just something that's due to us now. And I don't know this, Rob, but if you think about chapter 6, we're not very far off from here, and the total weakness of the world then was not included this same type of thing. I don't know. But it was so wicked that God decided to destroy it. Our next class, Wednesday night, we'll look at chapter 3. So if you want to read it 2 or 3 times, be good for that. And we'll talk about the breaking of this law. Dennis talked about as man sins, and then start getting your mind, if you don't have it, Genesis 3:15, in the context there. Well, it's got to know verses. We've got to hang on to it as we go through here. Genesis 3:15, that promise. It sets the stage for what's coming down the road. Okay? Thank you. Let's go. Yep. We talked about that quite a bit last time. We bring in John chapter 1. That in the beginning was the Word, which is Christ, and He was there with God then. Part of that creation process. All right, thank you.